Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Happy to be with you this Saturday afternoon. And, of course, I am co-host Joe. Happy to always be hosting here, Jane Silk. She might be around eventually someday again. She has sent me people that she would like on the show, so if I am able to get them, you'll be hearing her. But that is not the case for today's program. We are, at the moment, maybe slim on guests. Had someone back out on me. Boy, you know, everyone's asleep on Saturday morning unless they want to back out on you, right? Anyway, though, the Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist and give them props because, you know what? Some of their clients and even some of the members of the management team at Main Street Radio Network has disagreed with content on this program. So we are happy that they support us and the First Amendment. Also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing the show. Main Street Radio Network is at mainstreetradionetwork.com. And you can also find them on Twitter at Main Street Radio. And while you're out there, you know, you can find out more about the Al and Nathan Show as well. Sometimes I pop up on there as a host or a guest host, I should say, because it's not my show. But you can find out more about them at mainstreetradionetwork.com, just as you can find out about this show on there. And you can also find them at alannathan.com, on Twitter at alannathan. But the Silk or Joe Show is not without a social media presence itself, because Jane Silk, the Silk that you hear the name of in the title of this program, she posts on Facebook page for Main Street Radio Network. And we are also on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show. You know, I say that every show intro, so the moment my mother the other day asked me what the name of the website was, or instead of saying Getter, I added the spelling it out part too. But, you know, it's important because it's grammatically incorrect, you know. Getter, I don't even think is a real word, but if it were, it would be spelled GETTER. But the kind folks at Getter.com removed one of the E's there. Anyway, though, on to the program, because we had quite a busy news week, didn't we? President Trump was indicted and arrested, but then released. You know, they took, I don't think it was really a mugshot the way they described it. It said, like, photo for the court or something. Did sound like a mugshot. That was kind of odd phrasing for it, I guess. And digital fingerprints, I have no idea what those might be. I guess that's like the thumbprint that you have for your opening your phone or something like that. I mean, a different process than when I was arrested, I'll tell you. This was, you know, 14 years ago, but, you know, they had my fingers run through the ink and they even swabbed and got some of my DNA, but they didn't mention doing that for Trump, so I guess he got special treatment there. But I am curious about this arrest of him, because first of all, they say that out of all those boxes of documents that you saw, right, you've seen the pictures, just hundreds of boxes of documents all over the place, in the bathroom, in a room that looked kind of like a hallway with a copying machine, and just all over the place there, some kind of office room, and yet they only found 102 classified documents out of all those boxes. Consider, on all those pictures that you've seen, you probably saw 102 boxes. But the way they show them, it's like they're trying to imply that all these boxes were full of classified documents. Yet for anyone who has ever bought paper for their printer at home, or anyone who's ever had a 200-page journal, you know what 200 sheets of paper looks like already. Newsmax's Greg Kelly, in fact, the other day, he showed how easily all the alleged classified documents could fit into one box. Yet the media shows hundreds, like each box was considered a document or something. You know, Greg Kelly pointed that out too, but he didn't point out that phrasing there, where there were almost as many, if not more, boxes than there were alleged classified documents. Isn't that kind of peculiar? There's so few classified documents that, like, one page per box of 500 pages could have existed. And at that ratio, Trump is just guilty of Hillary Clinton of having items marked classified in an unsecured location. Except what Trump had actually was a secure location. Secret Service was protecting it. We'll get into that. So why the big fuss from liberals with Trump doing something that they approved of with Hillary Clinton? Except, like I said, it's not quite the same. They don't tell you that the Secret Service watched over these documents like a hawk. They don't tell you that the classified stuff was kept in a special skiff, a sort of government-level security safe. they don't tell you that the DOJ had seen the documents, knew everything was in there, had access to them before the raid on Mar-a-Lago. They don't tell you that this was part of an ongoing legal back and forth between Trump and the DOJ over whether he had the right to keep the documents. They don't tell you that Trump signed an executive order declassifying these documents, which is why he thought he had the right to them to begin with. He even showed the order. Instead, they just show boxes that have nothing to do with the classified documents that the DOJ went after. I mean, I know liberals suck at math because of their reparations ideas and economic policies, but the fact that they think a box full of 500 pieces of paper counts as one classified document is kind of alarming, isn't it? But as to the indictment itself, well, it seems that they're trying to get him on espionage. They're using something that was passed in like 1917 during World War One to try and get Trump, and one of the components of it is in fact the death penalty, and this isn't really covered under that, the Espionage Act. This is more of a Presidential Records Act sort of situation, but the indictment didn't mention the Presidential Records Act, which gives Trump the right to do stuff like this. In fact, every president prior to him has done stuff like this. You know, they didn't slap Joe Biden with the Espionage Act because he had classified documents where China had access to them. You might recall that he kept them at, the satellite office for his University of Pennsylvania thing or some think tank or other that was operated out of there that not only did the Chinese have access to, they paid to have access to it. A couple of $1 million ended up being donated to that particular think tank. And this particular think tank had classified documents stored just in filing cabinets. There was no Secret Service there, much like Hunter Biden's garage. There was no Secret Service there either. It was Hunter Biden's house, not Joe Biden's house. No one was protecting it, but we're supposed to believe that a locked garage is where apparently prostitutes had access, as well as anyone else Hunter Biden cared to drag in there. Apparently that is safer than the Secret Service protecting a government level safe, as was happening at Mar-a-Lago. It's, now, of course, that's ridiculous, but that's what we're supposed to believe, just as we're supposed to believe that hundreds of boxes are all filled with classified documents, yet the FBI only recovered 102. If all those boxes really were full of classified documents, the FBI and DOJ and whoever's been looking into it, they must be pretty blind or illiterate, have some pretty low standards of becoming an agent if out of all of those boxes you only found 102 documents and yet those boxes are full of them, right? I think we all know who's really full of it. Anyway, though, the leaks that preceded this indictment are a little interesting, too. They seem to be far too close to the case to be, just coincidental. And it had to have been coming from the DOJ. Some of the stuff, you know, Trump's lawyers didn't even know about beforehand. They couldn't possibly have known the source, known the stuff, meanwhile MSNBC is telling stuff that's happening, you know? So, but why aren't the DOJ, you know, being investigated for all these leaks about the case, right? Because this is actually, you know, even if you're a hardened anti-Trump, Trump hater, you have to admit, these leaks can be damaging to this case. You know, you could grant a motion saying that the jury pool was deliberately poisoned by these leaks, you know? That basically means that the other side, the opposing attorney, they leaked a bunch of sensitive stuff to the case that wasn't supposed to be leaked in order to bias the jury against your client. You know, that's not supposed to happen. So, if you do that, that could be grounds for dismissing the case, and that is what the DOJ has done. They have leaked all this stuff in order to bias anyone against Trump, including a potential jury. So, will they get a mistrial, and how will Democrats react when there is a mistrial for this reason? I mean, it seems almost like the DOJ might want a mistrial to happen because it keeps the media satisfied when they get all these leaks early. It keeps them on their side. It keeps this Trump's name in the headlines. But they also know that they don't have a real case here, so when the case does get dismissed by a biased and contaminated jury, they get to continue saying, oh, well, the case didn't go to trial, but clearly he's guilty. Whereas if the case did go to trial, if there was no biased jury excuse that Trump could use, and the case was dismissed, well, then that would really undermine their narrative severely. So as far as they're concerned, politically speaking, it's much better to just take it on the chin with getting the case dismissed over a biased jury. At least that's my opinion, and perhaps that seems to be how they're going about it as well. And by the way, this is the ultimate example of using a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. The special counsel in this case didn't show the jurors assembled that the Presidential Records Act applied here and allowed Trump to do this. Nor did they show that this was a precedent that was already set by Bill Clinton, of all people. Apparently he had something like classified documents in a sock drawer or something like that. So they did not show that to the grand jury, which is how they reached this indictment, because they had no other choice. Any evidence, anything that would have gone against the indictment, was left out. And that is how grand juries operate. That is why they say they can indict a ham sandwich, because the person running the grand jury gets to decide what they're allowed to see. And if there happens to exist stuff that would not lead to an indictment, then they can leave that out. But that stuff will show up in the courtroom, and like I said, I think that's why I think that this is going the way it's going. They just want a political victory. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
Struggling with credit card debt, high interest rates? There is a solution. Credit Guard of America is a nonprofit licensed and bonded company with an A-plus rating with the BBB. Credit Guard has helped people nationwide get out of debt for over 32 years. They will reduce your interest by up to 50%, stop collection calls, and roll everything into one low monthly payment. This is not a loan, and you do need at least $5,000 or more in credit debt to qualify. Call Credit Guard now at 800-208-9833 for a free, no-obligation consultation. That's right, call 800-208-9833 now.
This report is sponsored by Office Depot. At Office Depot, teachers mean the world to us. For all of their support, guidance, smiles, and tears. For the early morning extra help sessions, late night paper grading, and everything in between, their desire to create brighter futures and make the world a better place is inspiring. To thank teachers this Teacher Appreciation Week and beyond, teachers with a free Office Depot Office Max Rewards membership can get a special coupon for 30% back in bonus rewards on qualifying in-store purchases, including classroom supplies, arts and crafts, cleaning supplies, and more. Now through July 1st, visit officedepot.com/education to learn more. And thanks to the generosity of Office Depot and Office Max customers, the company raised over $2.1 million to support teachers, students, and Title I schools last year. The in-store school supply drive was recently enhanced, and this year will help hundreds of additional Title I schools nationwide. Visit officedepot.com or a local Office Depot or Office Max store to learn more.
Spring is here. Time to get out of the gym and take your workout outdoors. Whether you're walking, running, swimming, or biking, it's important to have a proper warm-up routine to prevent injuries. Five-time Ironman triathlon world champion Craig Crowe Alexander has some advice.
Sprains, strains, and injuries can happen to any athlete. Even a minor injury can affect your performance and derail your fitness routine. One of the best ways to try and prevent injuries is to make sure you prepare properly.
Alexander recommends always starting with a 10 to 15 minute dynamic warm-up.
Activation exercises combined with some dynamic movements like lunges are great for warming up. Focus on one specific movement at a time until you feel ready to go. Be sure to listen to your body and use proper support gear when needed to protect yourself and prevent injury.
The Curad Performance Series Ironman lineup includes rugged supports, wraps, kinesiology tape, bandages, and analgesics to support you on your fitness journey. For more, go to Curad.com.
Moms know it's the little things that matter most. A kiss for skinned knees, a hug for hurt feelings, and the small acts that keep families healthy. Many moms before me have seen serious diseases claim the health and lives of their families. Mine was affected by polio. Today, vaccinations for polio and many other diseases can help protect adults and children, generation after generation, mom after mom. Learn more about how to help keep your family healthy at vaccines.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. Is now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Show Show, everybody. We are now joined by Michael Chamberlain. He is Director of Protect the Public's Trust, and he is actually a former Special Assistant for Rural Outreach at the U.S. Department of Education. Michael Chamberlain, happy to have you on the show today. How are you?
Oh, thanks for having me, Joseph. Glad to be here.
All right, happy to have you. So right now, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, she's being accused of violating the Hatch Act, particularly because of her repeated references to mega MAGA Republicans, and there's no way I'm going to get that tongue twister out 10 times fast. What's your take on this?
Well, she's actually been more than accused of violating the Hatch Act. The Office of Special Counsel, which oversees that particular issue in the federal government, has determined that she was guilty of violating the Hatch Act. So the Hatch Act is a federal law that prohibits executive branch employees from using their official authority to interfere with or affect an election. So under the Hatch Act, federal employees can't engage in political activity while they're on duty. You know, they can't engage in certain things you can't show up to work wearing a campaign button for a candidate, a partisan political candidate, things like that. They can't use their office to help promote or to campaign for a candidate. So back in November of 2022, just before the midterm election, Karine Jean-Pierre came on, and during one of her White House press briefings, she said things like, you know, we've seen MAGA Republican officials who don't believe in the rule of law. They refuse to accept the results of free and fair elections, and they fan the flames of political violence through what they praise and what they refuse to condemn. And that kind of rhetoric there, the use of identifying certain partisan political candidates and disparaging them, it was apparent to us that was designed to influence the voters just in the run-up to that election last November. So at the time, we Protect the Public's Trust filed a complaint with the Office of Special Counsel regarding those comments and our assertion that they violated the Hatch Act. A few days ago, the Office of Special Counsel sent us a letter explaining that, yes, they did find Karine Jean-Pierre in violation of the Hatch Act for those comments that she made. But it turns out they weren't going to recommend any punishment. They just informed her of the violation that they found, and they were going to drop that issue at that point.
That seems to be par for the course, though. The Office of Special Counsel also found violations in the Trump administration, the Hatch Act, and there's violations in the Obama administration, the Hatch Act. No one is held accountable. It seems like, I don't know, this is a rule that nobody enforces.
It's there on the books, and in previous administrations they've found officials guilty of that. And in this case, it's not as if Karine Jean-Pierre isn't familiar with the Hatch Act on numerous occasions, and she's not shy about using it to avoid uncomfortable questions. And in our complaint, we noted several instances in the time around the filing of the complaint in which she had cited the Hatch Act as the reason to avoid answering a question. In addition, among the people that have been found guilty of violating the Hatch Act recently in recent times are Jen Psaki, who was her boss before she left and went to a network television job, and Karine Jean-Pierre became press secretary at that time, and also the White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klain, who'd also been found in violation of the Hatch Act. And there were, from other reports, there were 13 officials, I believe, in the Trump administration who had been found to violate the Hatch Act. And from our count, there have been at least six in the Biden administration that have been found to have violated the Hatch Act. And what they did say in the letter when they informed Ms. Jean-Pierre of her violation, that they were going to kind of let this one slide, but if she crossed the line again, they would consider it a knowing and willful violation. And that's similar to a finding that they had against Kellyanne Conway during the Trump administration, where they cited her for repeated violations, and they did recommend that some action be taken against her for what they say were multiple violations.
Now, who is it that, when action is recommended, and who actually carries that out? Because I don't recall hearing that Kellyanne Conway was punished in any particular way.
Generally, although it is a criminal statute and there could be criminal penalties that could be carried out, normally the punishments are left to the administration that's in power at the time. So even if Karine Jean-Pierre were found to have committed an additional violation, it would most likely be left up to the White House, the current White House, to determine whether she received the punishment or what punishment she would receive. Same thing in the Trump administration. So although this is at times made a lot of, and certainly politicians and others made some hay of any violations that happened during the previous administration, in a lot of cases it is a criminal law, and it was put in there by Congress to prevent certain types of activity. But it's one of those things where if you're a lower level official and you get in trouble for something like that, you know, you might face some punishment, but it doesn't appear that the high ranking and powerful officials would necessarily be prone to any type of punishment. But we still believe that this is a law that needs to be, if you're going to enforce it, we need to enforce it and not pick favorites about who should and shouldn't have this particular law used against them.
Right, but what's the point of having the law in the books if no one enforces it? Unless you're, yeah, I find an actual ironic use of the Hatch Act to only use it to go after your political opponents.
Excuse me. Yep. It is kind of ironic in that sense. But we believe that the law is on the books, and as long as it's there, then if it's going to be enforced, it should be enforced equally. And if people violate it in one administration, and then the people in other administrations should be held to the same standards.
Mm-hmm. So then going forward from here, let's say your case comes through and the Hatch Act actually is recommended for enforcement in the situation. Do you see the Biden administration actually doing it, or is it just, you know, hey, on the books that this should have happened and didn't?
Well, it's hard to say. Now, we would hope that they would look at the law and look at the violations and take some sort of action, or if the Office of Special Counsel is able to take any action, that they do that. If in fact in the future they carry through with what appears to be a threat of action. And another thing that I want to note here is...
Actually, you're just about out of time. Sorry about that. But Michael Chamberlain, Director of Protect the Public's Trust, appreciate you being on the Soaker Joe Show.
How often do you carry a wallet or take newspaper coupons to the store? While many of us no longer carry cash, new research from customer engagement platform SAP Amarsys says we have now reached a major payment milestone, as half of Americans say there is no need for a physical wallet Now they have mobile versions on their phone. And with 75% of us now using digital coupons, Kelsey Jones, retail expert from SAP Amarsys, explains how these changes are impacting our shopping experience.
When we simply look at the consumer statistics showing nearly half of us no longer see the need for a physical wallet, it becomes clear that it's imperative for brands and retailers to activate the right channels to connect with their customers. The mobile wallet, whether that's a loyalty card or a voucher, is a convenient and easy way for brands to engage with their customers wherever they are, whether that's online or in the store. To find out more on how mobile wallets drive loyalty in the customer's pocket, visit Amarsys.com.
I am thrilled to share America's favorite summer treats and summer flavors. For flavors, people are really into those red fruit flavors, so strawberry, cherry, and watermelon are the top three. And for treats, coming in at number one, probably no surprise, is chocolate. If you're anything like me, you love s'mores in the summer. Coming in at number two is gummy candy, so thinking about those red fruit flavors in gummy form. And coming in at number three, might be a little bit of a surprise, it's taffy, that classic boardwalk treat for the summer. Every summer activity can be enhanced by chocolate and candy, so whether you're headed to a barbecue, to the pool, to the beach, on a road trip, to a Taylor Swift concert, whatever you're doing can be improved with a little bit of chocolate and candy, adding that extra layer of sweetness. For more information, visit nationalcandymonth.com and then join the conversation on social media using hashtag NationalCandyMonth.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silkboard Joe Show, everybody. So, in case you were not aware by daily media coverage. Not only is it Pride Month, but Juneteenth is coming up in a couple of days. Now, Juneteenth always kind of bugged me just because it's not the last day of slavery in this country. In fact, that last day was sometime in December when finally 14th Amendment was passed, banning slavery. In fact, slavery was still very much legal and practiced in various states, including Joe Biden's home state of Delaware, by the way, right up until the very end. So what is this, these celebrations about? And also, the way the local media, at least around me, has been pushing it, probably the national media too, I don't know, I don't really watch them enough to see their coverage, but like they're pushing it like it's a long established traditional holiday akin to the 4th of July or something, but it only started nationwide last year. So what, how did you can it's really quite the propaganda push that you're seeing with this. There's just nothing against the date in particular. Like I said, if you wanted to make a national holiday out of something related to slavery, maybe the 14th Amendment passing, because slavery didn't stop until that point in time. But the timing of Juneteenth, though, places it right next to the 4th of July, and I think that's what they've been going for, because last year, when they were talking about it, they were directly contrasting it to the 4th of July. They were saying blacks had nothing to celebrate on the 4th of July. That's why they needed Juneteenth around this time. You know, they outright gave the game away on that one to try and say that we live in two separate countries, the African-American community and everybody else. And so that's why they picked Juneteenth, so that there was a 4th of July for African-Americans, even though, again, Juneteenth had really no bearing overall on the end of slavery in this country. It wasn't until the 14th Amendment that that happened. So I'm sure that the media push had a good reason to put it next to the 4th of July like that, but it's not really the date that you'd pick to celebrate. You know, it's like instead of celebrating the 4th of July, you celebrate the night that Thomas Jefferson finished writing the Declaration of Independence, you know, or finished the first draft of the Declaration of Independence a couple of months prior, instead of the actual date that it was signed by everybody, you know? So that's just that going on. But as far as Pride goes and all that, it seems to me, it popped in my head in the last segment for some reason, that, you know, LGBTQ plus rights were less under assault in the Trump administration, less under assault until, you know, they finally started really this huge push for all this stuff. You know, it's like they had more rights when they were quiet than afterwards. You know, all the people, because that's another thing that I see the local news coverage heavily biased towards, saying, oh, they're stripping rights from the kids and all that. It's like, no, they're making sure parents are involved, because kids make inappropriate and idiotic decisions. I know, I was a kid at one point, and let me tell you, kids make very bad choices. So taking parents out of the equation, you know, on the one hand, okay, maybe the parents are, you know, stodgy puritanical tyrants who might punish the kid, but then on the other hand, the parents probably do know better than the kid whether or not that they're trans. And good Lord, why are you doing this, showing them all these different types of actual sexual relationships when they're, you know, 10 years old? You know, it's enough to just say that mother and mother, father and father, because you will see that, you know, they gotta know about that, because they're gonna see it, and they're gonna think it's kind of weird if they aren't aware of it, and might poke fun at people for that, which would be wrong. But like, explaining the actual practices that those people do in their bedrooms, that is a bad thing, but that is what is done in the schools nonetheless. So that is something that should be stopped. You know, like, The other day I was reading about how parents protested, it was Armenians in California, I think it was, the Armenian-American community out there, and for one of their school districts, they were protesting how kids were being told that families can have father and father and mother combinations. Well, you know, I didn't see a problem with that. Like I said, kids should really know about that. I think they were going way over the top with protesting that, but you know, if they're protesting drag queen story hour because the person showed up dressed in lingerie, okay, yeah, that's a problem. They're protesting it because the person actually is a registered sex offender, which has happened. Yes, that is a problem. They should be protesting it. But just being told basic family structures, now that's actually okay because they're going to see that, the kids are, and it's not really, even if you disagree with that, it's not the kids' fault that they live in that darn family, gee whiz. So not exposing other children to the possibility of seeing such family, it really hurts the kid that is a member of such a family. And, you know, it's not what you want to be associated with, hurting kids like that. Leave it to the other side for hurting kids. Come on. But all this stuff about racism and pride, you know, it darn well just might get you locked out of your house. Let me tell you why. Amazon, they had a customer who, it was alleged by an Amazon delivery driver that they heard a racial slur uttered out of the man's Ring doorbell. I don't know if you're all familiar with that or not. It's the electronic doorbell that people have installed on their houses that has a little camera and microphone built into it so you can see somebody and you can either program it to give a response or you can give a response to yourself over it. Well, an Amazon delivery driver came up to this house, and as they were leaving, they thought they heard a racial slur. They reported that to their bosses. I thought I heard a racial slur, or perhaps they just said I heard a racial slur. And at that point, Amazon locked the house down. They removed the guy's, you know, the guy had the whole smart home kit and caboodle, including the smart locks. That is the electronic locks that Amazon controls. Well, Amazon shut him out of the house, made it so that he could not use their smart locks, meaning Amazon barred access to this man's house because a delivery driver reported a racial slur being uttered. Now, some of you out there, some of the more radical leftists out there in particular, will say, good, a person who utters racial slurs has no right to property or life in general. Well, here's the thing, this was a black man who made no such claim, or who made no such statement. They did not utter a racial slur. They had proof of it. They went to Amazon with that proof, and it took a week for this black man to get access to his house because he was accused of uttering a racial slur. Okay, so for all those of you who are cheering, ha, that white man got what they deserved for being locked out of their house for saying a racial slur, it turns out it was a black man. He didn't say anything. Yet, he was locked out of his house for a week because it took Amazon a week to go over to review this whole situation and decide, yes, you can have access to the house. Now, a corollary to this story is that the man who was locked out, he actually was scared that this sort of thing would happen, so he had some alternative in mind. I don't know, maybe he left the window unlocked or something. Yeah, I once had a neighbor who got locked out of their house and had left the window unlocked and had me go through the window to get it to unlock a door for them. But so maybe the guy did that. Although it was very awkward when someone drove by while I was doing that. But anyway, so maybe they did that. Maybe they didn't have to deal with someone driving by as they were breaking into their own house. But the point is, if this guy did not have the forethought to do such a thing, to have a backup plan in case something like this happened, then they would be locked out of their house for a week. They'd have to have a hotel room for a week, and they... I don't know, maybe there's something in the user agreement with Amazon that says that they're not held liable for this, but Amazon might have had a lawsuit on their hands, depending on that agreement, on the user agreement. So that's just something to keep in mind there. You know, you get all this smart technology, smart and locks, Alexa over your house and all that, and, you know, automatic control of your electricity and usage by the power companies, automatic control of your AC usage. Well, if they decide they don't like you, they can shut it all down, and you have no say in it, even if you did nothing wrong, as was the case with this gentleman who Amazon went after. He didn't do anything wrong. It was just a wild accusation coming from some low-level delivery driver. It had no truth to it whatsoever, yet this man could have been locked out of his house for a week if he didn't have a backup plan. The average person out there who's using this equipment would have been locked out of their house for that entire week because of an accusation. You know, you want to talk about false accusations destroying lives and livelihoods, but what if there was an infant in there, you know? What if there was pets in the house? If you leave a cat alone, even a cat, if you left the cat alone for a week, they could have been dead. Amazon don't care. Because false accusations of racial slurs are more important than the life of pets, apparently. or possibly the life of infants. You know, you have a baby around, you just gotta step outside to grab the paper or whatever, the door shuts behind you, then Amazon locks you out because one of its delivery drivers reported you said a racial slur when you didn't. Well, now your baby's dead because of Amazon. What then? So these are things that could happen, might happen, and almost did happen. So you gotta keep that in mind with these smart locks, smart houses. Who actually controls your house? It's not you. It's companies like Amazon. They're the ones who control whether or not you have access. So unless you satisfy them, you're done. In fact, someone can just make a false accusation against you and you're finished. Can't get into your house anymore. It's really bad if you have no money for a hotel either. You're on the streets. Folks, more Silk or Joe Show after this.
Rockstar Energy is jumpstarting the summer you want with the energy you need, giving away $50,000 to fuel your Memorial Day weekend. Millions of Americans are eager to kick off the holiday weekend with a travel getaway. In fact, experts predict 82% of summer travel will be by car. And with high gas prices, 89% will be looking for travel rewards, which is why Rockstar Energy wants to help you save at the pump and stay energized to get to your next destination. Here's how it works. Throughout Memorial Day weekend, the first 1,000 people to stop by any gas station, buy three Rockstar Energy products, and fuel up on gas or electric charge will get up to $50 cash back. Text ENERGY to 81234 to find out more. The rewards don't stop there. All summer long, you can earn up to $5 cash back when you buy two Rockstar Energy products and fill up at any gas station. To find out more, text ROCKSTAR to 81234. Let Rockstar fuel your drive this summer. I'm Kendra Wright.
June is National Dairy Month, and it's time to talk about the dairy aisle, an essential stop for most grocery shoppers. Chef Jamie Gwen has more.
The dairy aisle has always been an American staple, stocking essentials like milk, butter, and cheese. Alternative dairy items like creamers and almond, coconut, and soy milk are popular too.
A recent survey conducted by the National Frozen and Refrigerated Foods Association reveals that more than half of U.S. adults say they buy both dairy and non-dairy products. Millennials buy the most non-dairy items, with 3 out of 5 buying non-dairy items each trip to the store.
Products from the dairy aisle take up half the space in the majority of U.S. refrigerators. The dairy aisle is becoming the go-to place for new items. 65% of parents with kids under the age of 17 say they're willing to try something new.
To celebrate National Dairy Month, visit easyhomemeals.com to enter to win a $10,000 sweepstakes and view simple, unique, family-friendly recipes.
Struggling with credit card debt, high interest rates? There is a solution. Credit Guard of America is a nonprofit licensed and bonded company with an A+ rating with the BBB. Credit Guard has helped people nationwide get out of debt for over 32 years. They will reduce your interest by up to 50%, stop collection calls, and roll everything into one low monthly payment. This is not a loan, and you do need at least $5,000 or more in credit debt to qualify. Call Credit Guard now at 800-208-9833 for a free, no obligation consultation. That's right, call 800-208-9833 now.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy, and I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Heart valve disease is more common than you or your doctor may think, especially as you get older. It's serious but treatable with the proper diagnosis. If you or a loved one are experiencing shortness of breath, fatigue, chest tightness or pressure, dizziness or fainting, talk to your doctor and ask for an echocardiogram to get diagnosed early and enjoy your best quality of life. Learn more at askforecho.com. That's ask4echo.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Soka Joshua, right? Thank you for sticking with us through this hour. We are now joined by Emory McClendon, member of the Project National Center for Public Policy Research's Project 21 National Advisory Council. He is also a Tea Party organizer in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and a winner of Americans for Prosperity's 2010 Activist of the Year Award. Emory McClendon, happy to have you on the program. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Happy to be here to discuss some important topics.
Oh, yes. So this topic, for example, of Daniel Penny, he's facing, you know, up to 15 years for the charges that he has over the chokehold death of Jordan Neely. What do you make of this situation?
Well, first of all, I think that the term chokehold situation concerns me because I'm sure that what he did was try to restrain Mr. Neely from carrying out his threats that he made to several of the passengers on board the train in the subway in New York City. So out of concern, he stepped in as a good Samaritan to try to subdue the guy. And he wasn't alone. There were some other guys that actually tried to help him also. But he's the one that's being blamed and charged or indicted for the death of Mr. Neely. And I think that sometimes families, they get provoked into filing charges and making allegations against people simply because outside agitators come in and help out. And this is one situation you could almost look at and say that, because of the stepping in of Mr. Al Sharpton and some of the other ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the family of Jordan Neely, for example, I forgot where this was that I saw it, but someone pointed out, well, if the family is so concerned, why was he homeless?
That's absolutely correct. And why wasn't he given opportunity through the family's insurance or through other means, even through the state or the county, to get psychological help? He was known to have psychological problems. He was homeless. He was riding the subways and also down in the subway system. Why didn't the police intervene? He had to be doing, I don't know the whole story, but there's probably more video that'll come out in court and all of that, but he couldn't have just stepped on the plane, on the subway and then started this stuff. He had to be doing it outside too, more than likely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it is known that he has a history of, threatening stuff like this. And, if you're threatened, then don't you have a right to protect yourself? And apparently what Daniel Penny did, it wasn't even lethal on the scene either. It wasn't until Jordan Neely got to the hospital later on that he passed.
Yeah, and it's really a shame because what it's going to do, and especially in New York City, you have now a supposedly looked at political situation now coupled with a racial situation for people such as Mr. Penny not to step in when they see danger and situations where the public is involved.
Yeah, it seems like this is entirely an effort to boost criminal activity and boost threats to public safety. And, the response that I'm seeing is, well, that's just big city life for you. If you hadn't been robbed, then you don't live, then obviously a city isn't for you.
Yeah, and we have other people that have talked about this that were actually on the train itself that said that Mr. Penny is a hero and that he, by him stepping in, that he probably saved a few lives and a few serious injuries of other passengers that were on and probably even himself. Had he not been an ex-Marine and knew how to take down someone that was engaging in criminal activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes you wonder, all the people opposed to what happened, what would they have preferred that, you know, accidental death of Jordan Neely versus Jordan Neely deliberately hurting or killing people.
Right. And the situation is people don't really know. And according to Mr. Penny himself, he didn't do this on purpose. He didn't try to choke the man to death. His statement says that he subdued him. He moved in because he was fearing for the other people and himself. And he moved to subdue Mr. Neely so that no further injuries would take place. And now we have all of a sudden people saying that it was a deliberate chokehold and that he killed him. And like I said, Al Sharpton is calling for him to be charged with murder. And also the DA, Mr. Bragg, says that he was not going to arrest until murder charges were indicted against Mr. Penny.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear Alvin Bragg's position on this because he's the same guy who thinks that armed robbery should be a misdemeanor. And how can you get more death threatening than having a gun in your face?
Right, or having someone say that they're going to kill you, which he said to several of the people on the train, threw his garment at one or two of them and was walking around threatening them and approaching them. And Mr. Penny stopped him from carrying out his threat and his activity that he was going to do. He said that he didn't care. He wasn't going back to prison or anything. Or if he did go to prison, he didn't mind doing so or dying in carrying out his threat.
Yeah, under those circumstances, what was anybody supposed to do? Why is it that do you think that we're just seeing this elevation of the person trying to commit a crime, trying to hurt people, over the people protecting themselves?
I think we're seeing an increase in this because a lot of the prosecutors in larger cities, especially those that are being operated by Democratic mayors, Democratic city councils, Democratic state legislatures, and so forth within the state, are defunding our police officers. They're tying their hands. They're telling them that you can't intervene on these crimes unless they're heinous crimes. They're telling them that they cannot respond, and when they do respond, it's after the fact, and that the serious crime has already been perpetuated. So therefore, these people, they don't have any fear anymore of being prosecuted. And then another thing that adds to this is that when they are arrested, they're released on a minimum bail, and then the people who try to defend themselves or help others as a good Samaritan are being charged with crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to decriminalize being a criminal and criminalize being a law-abiding citizen.
That's absolutely right. We don't have any more constitutional rights. And like I said in my statement that I wrote for Project 21, a person is supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. And then where's our side? When do we get to testify and have people believe in our testimony and then take this to court and let the jury decide? Mr. Penny was released by the police and no charges were filed. And then Mr. Bragg called a grand jury because of pressure. And then I'm sure that the grand jury was under a lot of pressure because of the community and people like Al Sharpton screaming for a murder charge against Mr. Penny.
Mm-hmm. And with a grand jury, you know, tying this into something I said in the opening segment, you can indict a ham sandwich. It's very easy to. But Emory McClendon, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show today. Again, listeners, he's member of the National Center for Public Policy Research's Project 21. You can check them out, nccpr.org. And we are done with you folks today. Appreciate you tuning in. And again, our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com. Also, you can find us on social media, Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.